This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, this is employment law, but we're going to be talking about mediation of employment law lawsuits and disputes. It's my pleasure to have joining me one of the probably the longest guest, not every week, but the longest running guest on this program. I think Mark Rudy has been a guest on the program probably over a period of at least maybe 25 years, Mark.
Easily, Chuck. Easily. Happy to be here again.
He was and is a great friend of Your Legal Rights. And also the listeners of this program. Mark Rudy is an employment law attorney. Now he's exclusively an employment law mediator. He's a partner in the San Francisco law firm of Rudy, Axelrod, Zeef, and Lowe. He's a former member of the executive committee of the State Bar's Labor and Employment Law Section and former chair of the San Francisco Bar's Labor and Employment Law Section. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar. Additional funding is provided by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Welcome back, Mark.
Thank you, Chuck. Glad to be here.
Great to have you back here. You have been a great friend of this program. You were, I think, a real motivator with respect to getting the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar to be involved in funding programs, and it has for the last 20-plus years, ever since you've been a guest on this program, probably 25, 26 years.
It's a worthwhile program. I think the public certainly has benefited tremendously from the work you've done, and I'm happy to be here and still associated with it.
It's great to have you here. Would you do this? Talk just briefly a little bit about mediation versus arbitration, the types of mediation. And then let's let the listeners know what kind of cases you get involved with, because I think it's very important for them to understand the value of mediation. If you have a dispute in employment law, whether it's a case or whether it's just a dispute. So if you would.
Sure. I want to set the stage.
Please.
Because 20 years ago, mediation was very rarely used to resolve disputes. Most parties went to court. They spent a lot of time and money. The judges generally held settlement conferences. The judges were very overworked. They could not spend a lot of time resolving cases. And I think the public began realizing that sometime in the late 80s, early 90s. And so what evolved was some of the judges who were on the bench for a while became private judges.
Mm-hmm.
Some lawyers who have been involved in litigation or involved in trial work decided to do mediation. And as the time has gone on, it has become probably the most used process to resolve cases in this country rather than going through the expense of trial. Now, mediation is different than arbitration. Generally, the parties agree on a voluntary basis to go and work with a neutral like myself in a law office or another setting away from the courthouse, and on a confidential basis, sit down and spend whatever time is necessary during the day and sometimes after that day with the sole effort to try to resolve the case. And so you have a neutral, myself or others, who are not representing one party or another. They're not going to make decisions for the parties,
mm-hmm.
but they're going to encourage them to try to resettle the case rather than having to go through a very lengthy, expensive, emotionally draining court process. Arbitration, on the other hand, is where a person who's a neutral is selected, who in like a mini trial, but not mm-hmm. in front of a jury, just as either a single arbitrator or three arbitrators, hear the evidence and render a decision. So the arbitrator makes a decision, the mediator does not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the reason that I think mediation has become so popular is that parties recognize that this is the best chance they have to settle the case, and at the end of the day, they, rather than a jury or a judge, make the decision on whether they're willing to settle.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really puts the situation in such a place that you can get a settlement that you're participating in that would put closure to the case, and hopefully the parties will believe that it's a satisfactory result has occurred.
And the parties are in control of this, whereas the mediator is not.
That's correct. The mediator, there's different levels or forms of mediation.
Mm-hmm.
Some mediators are very good at getting the parties to start discussing their issues, because communication creates 90% of the lawsuits.
The lack thereof.
Right?
Yes.
And, you know, so there's just a breakdown in communication. And when you get a neutral involved who's not been at all, you know, knowledgeable about the controversy, who comes in, who's got a lot of expertise in, like, employment or real estate or whatever it is, who can get the parties to start discussing the problems and then offer some opinions, some advice about ways to resolve the case. The goal is to get the parties to get to a settlement. And there are mediators who are engaged the parties in discussion and really don't render opinions or advice. That's called facilitative mediation.
I see.
Then there are mediators who are evaluative, who are providing evaluation. And I've done a lot of trial work in the employment area.
By evaluated, what do you mean by that?
Okay, so you come into my office, and you're a single person who's got a employment case against your employer, and you say that, you know, I was fired because I complained about work conditions. But you also had a lot of performance reviews that didn't look very good.
They didn't do, look
very
good, huh?
And there's nothing in the record that shows that you really complained. So I may sit down and say, Chuck, the judge is a gatekeeper in the litigation, and it's possible, based upon what you've told me, that the judge, or maybe probable, that the judge could throw this case out because it's questionable whether you complain. And you've had some performance issues. And the best way to resolve this dispute, and the company's willing to sit down and pay a fair sum to settle it, is to work with me, and I'll work with the company to get the case settled, because there's a high risk, there's a great chance that you're not going to prevail in the litigation. And, you know, I will tell you, Chuck, you know, I've been through many trials with clients. It's, you know, we're all trained, of course, to be trial lawyers, but
and advocates.
Advocates.
Yeah.
But for clients, going through a jury trial for 2 or 3 weeks is emotionally draining.
Sure.
I've had clients tell me I never want to go through that experience again.
Yeah.
And mediation is a way to get the case resolved without having to do that.
And also mediation, one of the major advantages of mediation, I presume in most of the mediations that you have been involved with, and probably most mediators, is that it's very cost-effective as compared to litigating a case where you may have a long period, parties may have a long period of discovery, depositions, et cetera, motions in court, and waiting to be able to get a courtroom for a trial. Am I right on that?
Not only are you right, but some mediations, there's no cost at all because the court systems in various counties in California have arbitration mediation programs. They're called alternate dispute resolution.
ADR.
ADR programs. And so they get people to sign up, lawyers, former judges, to volunteer some time to try to resolve cases that are referred from the court. So, for example, in San Mateo County, there, and I know in Santa Clara County this program is available, in other counties also, you would come in to see me as a volunteer, and the first 3 or 4 hours would be without charge.
Really? Wow.
And that's my service to the court. And then if there's work that has to be done before or after that, oftentimes the person will say, I'll go ahead and continue working on it because it's important to get closure.
Yes.
So there's that aspect of it. And also there are mediations, of course, that are you have to pay the mediator. And, you know, their mediation fees could be quite, depending upon the case, could be quite, you know, expensive to do this type of work. But sometimes the employer has a program that they pay everything.
Yes, I
see. And so the employee doesn't really have to pay it.
Well, but the, again, the fact of the matter is mediators, generally speaking, fees may be expensive. as opposed to what an attorney may charge, let's say on an hourly rate for representing somebody. But the hourly rate of representing someone in a lawsuit that's going to be litigated could turn out to be extremely expensive.
Much more than a one-day mediation.
Yeah.
Much more.
So tell us, if you would, you've been practicing law well into 40 years or so, right?
Correct.
What got you into mediation?
Well, in 1988, I, out of the blue, got a call from a lawyer who I knew. He was representing a company, and I had a case against them. I was representing employees. And he said, "Mark, I want to ask you to do something I'm sure you've never done before." I said, "Okay, Jim, what do you want me to do?" "Would you come in on a Saturday? I have a case that's going to trial on Monday. The parties desperately want to settle the case. We couldn't get enough of the court's time to sit down and try to resolve it. But I think if, you know, you can come in and you've been in the trenches before, you've done a lot of trials and work with both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can get this case settled." So I called the employee's lawyer who I knew, and I said, "You know, I've never done this before, but I'm willing to come in." And I came in, and I got the case settled. They avoided a 3-week trial.
How long did you mediate that?
That was about a 12-hour day.
Did you? A long day.
Long day.
You exhausted them. And they said, "We give up,
Rudy,
we give up."
That's right.
Now, in a mediation where the parties settle this, as I understand it, the terms of the settlement are put into writing.
They are.
Who does the writing?
Well, first of all, I want to discuss something very important.
Please.
This mediation process is confidential.
Yes.
Totally independent of the court.
Yes.
So both parties are in a position to be very honest with the mediator, very candid about the case. Whatever is discussed in the mediation context cannot be used by the parties in the court proceeding.
Yes, if there is a court proceeding.
If there's a court proceeding.
Yes.
Or if there's going to be a court proceeding.
Yes.
So at the end, if there is an agreement, well, first of all, the parties at the beginning sign a confidentiality agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time—
that's California law, is it not?
California and other states, too.
Yes.
What I tell the parties, you know, I have no conflicts of interest. I've never represented either side. I've learned about this case for the first time. Whatever we do, when I got the papers from the parties, whatever we do cannot be used in the trial. Mm-hmm. I cannot be called as a witness.
Mm-hmm.
I will make no reports to the court. So everybody understands that, though this is different than a court proceeding, and you're in a position to have a good, thorough discussion without the fear that, you know, if you're on the other side, Chuck can't say, "Mark, I remember what you told me in the mediation session.
Yeah, don't you remember?"
So that's really important because it leads to a free-flowing discussion. If you complete the mediation and you get it settled, the parties enter into a written agreement. It's called a settlement agreement. It covers the terms.
Mm-hmm.
It's enforceable under California law. Mm-hmm. The parties must abide by it.
Who generally writes the agreement?
Generally, the parties share in the writing of it. Or I don't do the writing, but I review it and I work out any issues involving it.
And in most of your mediations, I'm assuming, or maybe nearly all of them, if not all of them, the lawyers representing the parties will be there with their clients, will they not?
Yes, they will.
Yeah.
And sometimes they don't have lawyers.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I've had some situations where the party has come in without a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And, I am very careful, of course, to explain the process. But things really don't change very much.
Yes, yes.
Now, we talked before the show about, you know, how do you become a mediator?
Yes.
Well, it's really interesting. We have people who are not lawyers who are very good mediators, especially those who have specialized in a certain area like construction, mm-hmm, or real estate,
mm-hmm,
or some type of consumer business.
Yes.
And we have judges who have retired who, mm-hmm, as a second career, become mediators. And then we have people like myself who are lawyers who have specialized.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very important for a mediator to be successful, to mediate cases in the law you know about.
Oh, sure. Of course.
So, right.
We would hope. We would hope. Yeah.
So, you know, it's, you know, I can't advocate enough for the mediation process. It's been, you know, it's really changed the lives of people in getting cases resolved, you know, without the bad option of having to go through a long, expensive trial.
Certainly, I know with the programs that I have done with family lawyers who are very, very into mediating the disputes between parties to a divorce, that it's very, very valuable, both emotionally as well as cost-wise. So I have learned through this program about how valuable mediation can be.
Oh, absolutely. And employment cases are quite emotional.
I bet they are. Let me do this. For those of you who have just tuned in, this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. It's my pleasure to have back as a guest Mark Rudy, who now is exclusively a mediator. He's also an employment law attorney, but exclusively a mediator. Mark became involved with Your Legal Rights as when he was a member of the executive committee of the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, which probably was the late 80s, believe it or not.
The 20th century.
of the 20th century. And Mark has been on the program a number of times, a great believer in going out and trying to educate the public about legal issues, etc. And so tonight, if you've tuned in a little bit late, we're focusing on mediation. For those of you who are listening to us live, whether it's in the Bay Area or whether you're listening on the internet at www.kalw.org, in a few minutes I will give the local phone number to you and you can call in with a question, a comment, etc. And so what we're going to do right now, if you would, Mark, what kind of cases are you seeing? What in the remaining, let's say, 13 minutes of the statewide version of the program, although we will be on the air live for a full hour, what kind of cases are you seeing?
Well, you know, since I do 80% of my mediation work is employment work,
yeah.
I see employment discrimination cases mm-hmm. involving age, national origin, mm-hmm. gender. Mm-hmm. Disability discrimination cases, that type of work has been there forever. And these cases are really suitable for resolving because they are emotionally driven in many ways. And some of these employees are long-term employees, and you can get closure for them early on without the nastiness of litigation. But in the last 5 to 10 years, there's been a tremendous amount of litigation involving wage and hour cases.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
By that I mean where employees say that we haven't been paid properly for overtime, mm-hmm. or we haven't gotten our meal and rest breaks,
mm-hmm.
or other things that involve compensation issues that, for instance, we have spent some of our own money mm-hmm. to undertake business pursuits, and we haven't been paid for that. So there's a lot of protection under California law for employees involving various aspects of their employment as it relates to wage and hour. So typically, a lot of these cases are brought as class action cases.
Would you very briefly explain what that means?
Right. So you would have, and usually lawyers, of course, are representing one or more employees who are claiming similar violations by the employer.
They would be named on the caption of an actual filed civil complaint.
As class representatives.
Yes.
And they would allege that, you know, on behalf of a class, we are claiming that company ABC has misclassified our job. They have us as salaried employees, mm-hmm. and they don't pay overtime, when, in fact, the duties we have are not that important, and we should be paid by the hour and should be paid overtime. And we're working 60-hour work weeks, getting paid for 40 hours on a salary basis mm-hmm. that doesn't even meet the minimum wage. And so you see that type of it started probably in the mid-90s, but it really took a while to evolve. And then in the last 5 to 7 years, tremendous amount of litigation involving class actions and mediators come into play because those cases are very, very expensive.
I would think so.
Yeah, because you're essentially attacking the business practices of the company. And so the company, of course, is going to vigorously defend, but at great expense. So it behooves the company and of course, the class to come into mediation, work with an experienced mediator, and discuss resolving the case so it doesn't only benefit the class representatives, but benefits the entire class of people. And probably about half of my practice is doing wage and hour class action work.
Really?
And five to seven years ago, it was much less.
Yes. Wow, that's very interesting. I'm surprised at that. How does that work for let's say, someone who is not the named party, the representative on the caption of the complaint that may have been filed in court in California? How does that, if there is a class action settlement and this person who may fit within the class is not one of the named representatives of the class, if there's a settlement and that person doesn't agree with the settlement, for example, oh, that's not enough money that I'm getting as a member of the class, what is there any restriction by the mediation settlement that person can't pursue, let's say, even a small claims action against the company?
Well, there is protection for that person, and here's how it works. Class actions are subject to being approved by a judge.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a settlement that occurs as a result of a mediation that involves a class, it will go to a judge who will review to see whether it looks fair to him or her. And the parties have to submit very detailed statements about here's what the nature of the controversy is, here's what the size of the class is, here's what the proposed settlement is, and the judge, as a preliminary matter, will decide whether or not it looks like a fair settlement.
Mm-hmm.
If it is a fair settlement, notice will go out to everybody who's not a class representative, first-class notice. Mm. Now, people who are your listeners may look at that and say, oh, this is a court document. I'm going to throw it in the garbage.
Mm-hmm.
You should open it and you should read it because you have an opportunity to do one of several things. You can participate in the settlement and get some benefits from it.
Mm-hmm.
You can object to the settlement if you think it's unfair, or you can opt out of it. You can say, I don't want to be part of this. And it's unfortunate because many times people who are, just getting a first-class mailing from the court are going to say, well, God, I don't know what this is about, but I better not open this envelope.
Why would they? I don't understand that. What explanation would there be that why someone would not want to open a first-class envelope from the local county superior court?
I don't know.
I think there's
just the fear that, there's something really bad in this envelope. Maybe they're searching for me or they want me to be a witness in a case or whatever.
Oh, my. Or maybe it's my jury duty. I don't want to be a juror. who knows?
Well, that creates other problems if they don't attend.
Yeah.
So there are just so many different protections that are available, and it's got to be due process. So
yes.
You're going to have to, again, go to the court and let notice get sent out, and then you would, if you want to participate, you would fill out a pretty simple claim form, and then you fill it out, and then
that goes to the court, or where does it go?
It goes to an administrator.
I see.
Yes, there's an administrator usually paid for by the employer.
I see.
Who goes ahead and prepares the checks and sends out checks. So what happens is for the employees, they benefit as a group. For the employer, they get closure. Instead of getting sued by 15 different individuals.
Or more.
They get a class action settled, and they get everything wrapped up in one proceeding.
What about people in this may not be a frequent thing, but what about people who feel that, because of my gender or because of my age or because of my nationality, I feel I haven't gotten a promotion because of that? Now, do you have any cases like that?
Many.
Really?
Oh, yes. You know, the economy has been very bad for
terrible.
A long time.
Terrible, yeah.
And so what has happened is layoffs occur.
Yes.
And there are employers have gotten much better at making sure that there's no disparate treatment or there's, you know, one group of people is not adversely affected, you know, in terms of the layoff. Mm-hmm. So they're supposed to carefully review to make sure that we're not targeting older people or disabled mm-hmm. people mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. people of color or women mm-hmm. For termination. But sometimes they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, those claims are brought mm-hmm. and, you know, they're mediated and they're settled. If the evidence supports that one of these protected categories was a factor, a substantial factor in the decision to let this person go, and the person suffers wage loss and emotional distress damages, some of these settlements that occur through mediation are quite significant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing a lot of those cases that have come about. And, you know, I think, again, you know, mediation is the way to resolve those cases. Now, some cases go to trial.
Do you find that some people are so wary of attorneys or the fees of attorneys that they don't do anything for themselves? In other words, don't want a lawyer, and if they seek perhaps to go to mediation, they'll try to do it on their own? Or is that a rare situation?
It's pretty rare.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I have seen some of the cases where there are court referrals that mm-hmm. people are representing themselves in mediation.
Sure.
And I think it's incumbent upon the mediator to treat them no differently, you know, than if they were represented by counsel. I mean, they have claims. Some of them are claims that are strong
mm-hmm.
claims.
Mm-hmm.
And the mediator should, of course, treat everybody similarly.
In the remaining few seconds of the statewide version of the program, how does someone find a mediator?
Well, you know, through law firms, I mean, if they have a
okay.
lawyer they know, or through the Bar Association.
Bar Association of their county.
Of their county,
the county.
Or other counties, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. It's 7, about not quite 7:28 at 91.7 KLW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. I want to give you an opportunity, if you are an employer or an employee and you'd like to call in and talk with my guest, Mark Rudy, the number is 1-415-841-4134. If you're listening to the program on the Internet at www.klw.org, you also can call in. It's 1-415-841-4134. We're doing one aspect of employment law. This program is funded by the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar of California. Mark Rudy has been very much involved with this program for probably a minimum of 25 years. He is a former member of the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar. He was the chair of the San Francisco Bar's Labor and Employment Law section. He has been practicing law well into 40 years and has, the last 3 years become exclusively a mediator?
A little more than 3 years, right.
A little more than 3 years. So I want to have you feel comfortable in calling in if you have a question about employment law, not necessarily just mediation, but employment law, whether you're an employee or an employer and you'd like to pose it to Mark Rudy. He's certainly happy to respond to that. He has been practicing. Your entire career has been practicing employment law, has it not?
It has been.
Okay. So he's very, very highly versed in this. Again, 1-415-841-4134. Let me just mention something to you in case you're interested while you're thinking, should I call in or not? By the way, I want to warn you, do not call in at, 7:54 or 7:55, because that may be too late. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. For a referral to a lawyer, you can call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. The number is 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county throughout California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. You should be able to get a live person on the line. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone who's experienced in the area and set you up for a half an hour consultation. This is I consider a very wise investment for a half an hour through most lawyer referral services throughout California. The low might be $25, the high might be $35. That's pretty much standard. And so that's available to you. Something else I'd like to tell you about, in case you're interested in getting any one of many free pamphlets that the State Bar offers to people, you might want to either call them on the phone, 415-538-2280, 415-538-2280. By the way, these pamphlets are very well done. The State Bar has been doing this for many, many years. Or you can go to the State Bar's website and see what the pamphlets are, www.calbar.ca.gov, www.calbar.ca.gov. For those of you who've joined us in the last few minutes, we're doing a program on mediation of employment law lawsuits and disputes, but Mr. Rudy will be willing to go with other questions in the employment law area. Mark Rudy is an employment law attorney. He's now exclusively a mediator. He's a partner in the San Francisco law firm of Rudy, Axelrod, Zief, and Lowe. He's a former member of the Executive Committee of the State Bar's Labor and Employment Law Section and former chair of the San Francisco Bar's Labor and Employment Law Section. We're going to start with David. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi, David.
Hi. Hi.
You're on the air.
Hello. My question is regarding an employee that has that's a software developer. And has there's a specific section that sets the minimum amount of annual salary below which they're treated as a non-exempt employee, that's roughly $82,000 a year. And my question is the employer allowed to put in writing exemptions? Basically, that where the employee agrees to work overtime for a certain number of hours, or is that allowed? Is it allowable for an employer and an employee to set up an agreement that that is different than the state minimum statutes for non-exempt employment?
And so, if I may interject something here, so if for example the employee really is at the direction of the employer as opposed to a private contractor who is not being directed by the employer. I think you're giving some thought to that also. Are you, David?
I am.
Yeah.
In this case, the employee is indeed and has been an employee for quite some time, and they're not a contractor, but
okay.
We're actually considering, do we make them a contractor or do we continue along the lines,
And the basic issue is if the employer puts into writing that this person is an independent contractor, does that control when actually the relationship between the employee and the employer is one that the employee is not an independent contractor but is at the control and direction of the employer?
Yeah,
Mark, would you mind responding?
I'm not sure if that's his question. There is
okay.
There is a section of the statutes, the computer software programmer exemption, where if the salary is below a certain level, like $82,000, you can't rely upon that exemption to deny somebody overtime. Now, mm-hmm. David mm-hmm. says, well, what if we just agree with the person that, you know, you're waiving your right to claim
the overtime.
Yeah. I mean, you can do that, but still, it's a potential violation. However, there are other exemptions that could maybe apply here. There's a professional exemption. There's an administrative exemption. There's an executive exemption. Mm-hmm. So it's very complex. So, you know, you could argue, I guess David may be an employer, you could argue that the person that we're talking about, this person who is a computer software specialist, exercises independent judgment and discretion and performs non-manual work that's directly related to the business of the company.
Mm-hmm.
So there are three or four different exemptions that apply. Mm-hmm. And it could be that the employee fits in one of those exemptions. It's not an independent contractor situation. It's more of which exemption, if any, applies.
Obviously,
here, the computer exemption would not apply because a gentleman or a woman earns less than the set amount under the statute.
So, David, it sounds like, and tell us if you would, that you are an employer, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. And do you have an attorney?
We have counsel, but not for HR and employment law.
It sounds to me that you need to start looking for an employment law attorney. Mark, what do you say?
Well, I think so, David. This is a very complex area, and there are various exemptions, as I mentioned to you. And I really think the problem is if the employee fits none of the exemptions, and the employee is working 60 hours per week and is a non-exempt employee, and a lot of these software people work a lot of long hours.
Yeah.
You have a huge overtime problem together with penalties.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really have to be very careful and you need to get legal advice on that issue.
Do all employment law attorneys have knowledge of this, or are there only certain ones that you would suggest at least David start looking for?
The latter. This is a special area.
Yeah.
And it's very, as I said, very challenging, very complex.
How would he start looking for one of these employment law attorneys who has this kind of knowledge?
Online.
Online? Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways you can do it online.
Okay. David, does that help you?
It does greatly.
Yeah. My take on this, I've been a lawyer. This is my 49th year as a lawyer. The program is now in its 31st year, Your Legal Rights. But my take on this is, I think in the long run, if you find an attorney who's knowledgeable about this, although it may cost you something, it's going to turn out to be a very wise investment because you'll avoid perhaps litigation, et cetera, et cetera. So good luck to you.
Okay, thank you very much.
David, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate it. All right, 1-415-841-4134, whether you're in the San Francisco Bay Area or if you're listening to us on the Internet at www.kalw.org. The number is 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. My guest is Mark Rudy, an employment law attorney mediator who is exclusively a mediator. But if you have questions in the employment law area, whether you're an employer or an employee, please, we're asking you to give us a call. Don't wait until another 20-some-odd minutes because it'll be too late. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hi, Chuck. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. So my question is, I have been negotiating with a manager at a large tech company to work as a contractor. So,
as an independent contractor, right?
Yeah, so probably around 8 to 16 hours a week, something like that.
Hmm.
I then got a call just recently, so it seems that what the company wants to do is hire me, have me get hired by an outsourcing agency, like a staffing agency, and then have the staffing agency kind of, you know, send me over to the company. So I'd become like a W-2 employee of the staffing agency.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, are there kind of legal issues around this, and what kind of questions should I be asking to make sure that I'm going to be in an okay situation here?
Right. So that's pretty common, that there are a lot of industries where staffing agencies provide personnel to various clients. And the critical question is, who controls your employment relationship? There are situations where staffing agencies not only provide personnel, but they provide payroll services, human resources services, and other services to their clients. And that could create a joint employer relationship where both parties are responsible for what happens to you at work. On the other hand, some of the staffing agencies are clearly only placing people, and they could be, then put into a job for 8 or 16 hours a week like your job, and the control is solely with the company you've been assigned to. So you really have to look at each individual case to see who's performing what service. But I think you have sufficient protection if you're working at a company, say, 8 to 16 hours and you get injured on the job. Somebody's going to have to cover you with workers' compensation insurance. And also, there's going to be somebody who's going to be declared to be an employer, whether it's a joint employer or whether the staffing agency is the employer or whether its client is the employer. So I don't think you lack protection in that type of setting.
Can I ask a short follow-up question?
Go ahead. Sure.
So in that situation, because I'd be an employee of the staffing agency, can they legally put any kind of limits on my ability to work for, normally if you become an employee with a company, you sometimes have to sign, like, I will not work for other companies or things like that. Can they legally do that?
Absolutely not. This is a state where you're allowed to compete. You can work, more than one job. You can't be prevented from competing or, going to work for a company that does the same type of line of business as the one you're working for.
As long as you don't take the customer list of your current company to the one you're going to,
right.
I presume.
You can't take confidential information,
yeah.
The customer list or whatever. So, no, you can go ahead and, work 8 to 16 hours, for one company and then spend the rest of your time doing other professional pursuits.
So, great. Thank you very much. That's really helpful.
Okay, Andrew. Thank you very much for calling. Good luck to you. All right. Our number, 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. Whether you're an employer, manager, or an employee and have employment law questions, please join us. Mark Rudy is my guest. He is been an employment law attorney for into 40 years. We won't say how many 40 years. He is now, for a little bit more than 3 years, exclusively a mediator, but one of the great friends of this program for probably, well, at least 25 years.
Oh, definitely.
I think the labor and employment law section is the section of the state bar that has been the funder of this program longer than any other.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think so. And the Board of Legal Specialization, California Board of Legal Specialization of the state bar, I think is probably very close to that, but just a little bit shy. I think it's been funding the program for about 24 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I've left something out, Chuck, in
Please.
Terms of discussion, the mediation.
Yeah.
The whole process. Question is, who do you bring to the mediation?
That's right.
So, obviously, the employee would come
yes.
with counsel. Do
yes.
you bring witnesses? You don't bring witnesses. This is not a trial.
Can bring witnesses?
Well, generally, you don't.
You
because
don't. Okay.
Because you don't
right.
take tests. It's not
no.
a trial.
Okay.
No,
right.
It's good to bring a spouse or partner or, somebody who is closely affiliated with you who's going to help you make a decision.
I
That's
see.
Fine.
Okay.
It's also important to bring documents that support your claim, even though the mediator is not making a decision. You want to try to convince the mediator to help you get a settlement because you have a strong claim.
Mm-hmm.
And if you come in and just say, well, I have a strong claim, but you don't have any evidence supporting it, then it's very difficult for the mediator to get leverage from the employer.
Mm-hmm.
And I say the same thing for employers. They should bring in whatever evidence they have supporting why we did the right thing in terminating this person. I've also told employers that they should bring in somebody who can make a decision for the company,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
the people are devoting the entire time, in a long day, to try to settle the case. And if somebody who has no settlement authority for the company doesn't attend.
Does this happen to any substantial degree? Where they
it happens often.
Often. Here's, obviously here, too often.
And here's the problem.
Like. Yeah.
Mediators cannot force people to come.
Of course not.
It's judges can order somebody to come to a settlement conference.
Sure.
But I can't call, and you know, if you're an employer, I can't call you, Chuck, and say, listen, you own this company. You better show up at this mediation session. And you're going to tell me, what do you mean show up? I'm sending my secretary. But the case doesn't get settled because you're on the phone. And, you know, the other thing I wanted to mention is the does insurance cover these type of cases?
That's a good point.
So generally, insurance companies will not cover wage and hour disputes.
Mm-hmm.
They exclude them from the policies.
Really? And,
That's because it's potentially very expensive.
Yes.
Some insurance companies are now starting to provide coverage, but very high expense to the employer. But if you have a discrimination case, you know, a single, you know, type of retaliation claim or any type of discrimination, employers now buy employment practices liability insurance, they provide coverage. And so there are, not only do you have an employer who's coming to the mediation, but you also have an insurance carrier who's going to come and participate in the mediation.
What kind of obligation does the insurance carrier have in something like this?
Well, if there's insurance coverage under the policy, they've got to act in good faith.
So in other words, if there is a claim, a claim for dollars by the employee, this kind of insurance coverage would cover that. Is that correct?
Well, sometimes there's a pretty big deductible that the employer must cover.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, there is coverage.
Very interesting. I didn't realize that.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my, that's very interesting. Anything else before we take another call?
No.
All right. All right. Naveen, we've been waiting for you. Hi.
Hi, Mark.
You're on.
Hi, Naveen.
Mark, I would like to get in touch with you. What is the best number and what is your email address?
Go ahead.
Okay, well, you know, I'm a full-time mediator, but if you have a case, an individual case, you can call my office at 415-434-9800.
Did you get that, Naveen?
Yeah, it's
415-434-9800.
Thank you very much, Mark. It was a pleasure listening to your voice on the air. Thank you, Papa.
Okay. You don't have a question. All right. Very good.
All right. So,
all right. Okay, go ahead.
There are a lot of things I want to talk to you about mediation.
Good.
The time when you get your settlement agreement signed may not be the end of the whole process because sometimes employers get cold feet or the parties get cold feet. So the question often becomes, what can you do to enforce the agreement?
Okay. Yeah.
So in the settlement agreement that you have at the end of the day, you put a statement in that this agreement is enforceable under the laws of the state of California. And so if the party doesn't fulfill its promises, whether it's the employee or the employer, you can go into court and get the judge to enforce that agreement to make sure it takes place.
Do you have to, though, if you can go into court, do you have to then file a lawsuit based upon the settlement agreement?
If the case is already in litigation.
Oh, then that doesn't matter. Sure.
If it's not in litigation, you may have to file a complaint.
A new complaint.
And then go in into court.
Gotcha.
Okay. The other thing. Mediation is give and take. You know, you shouldn't come into mediation and say to the mediator,
I want it all.
at 9 o'clock in the morning, listen, Mr. Rudy, I want $1 million because I just read about a jury verdict that came in for $5 million, and my case is at least worth 20% of that case.
Yeah.
Every case is unique. So you can't, and you often see this in the press and on the internet, big jury verdicts come in. You can't rely upon that in evaluating the case. You have to really look at, and you got to rely upon mediators and your lawyers, who presumably are very experienced, in looking at this particular case? And what are the damages? Have you gone out and gotten medical care? Have you looked for other work?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know,
because that's a part of your responsibility to try to mitigate the damages.
Mitigate your damages, right. So
yeah.
I just did a mediation. This was about 10 days ago in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
The person got terminated from his position 2 years ago. Around the same time, he inherited considerable monies.
Mm-hmm.
He's not looked for a job more than once or twice. He comes into the mediation and he says through his lawyer, I'm entitled to 2 years of pay and future pay. Okay? And, you know, and the employer's got to pay it. Now, I thought the claim wasn't a bad claim, but this gentleman did not mitigate. And I don't know how the employer found out about this, but maybe they found it up through public records. This gentleman inherited $2 million.
Oh. Hmm.
And yeah. So he's obviously not mitigated his damages.
No.
And so the mediator cannot really help there. So, yeah. You know, it's really important that you go ahead and do your best to reduce your damages as much
yeah.
as possible.
And be honest with your attorney, by the way.
Another important factor.
Put the cards on the table. Don't play games with your own attorney.
Right. You see, eventually, because of, as you know, the discovery rules are such
sure.
that your whole life becomes you know, known to the other side.
Yeah.
And especially with social media.
Oh, boy.
So
yeah.
I've got to tell you one war story.
Please.
A couple years, about a year ago, I did a disability discrimination case. The woman claimed that she was not reasonably accommodated because she had a chronic back problem.
Mm-hmm.
They provided her with some ergonomic equipment, but not enough. But her condition got worse. And she came in and she says, you know, I have been totally unable to work. Well, I hadn't checked her Facebook page, but the employer did. And there were photos of her dancing in Las Vegas at her birthday party.
Oh my.
And not dancing a slow dance. So
really
here's a woman.
It up, huh?
Here's a woman who's claiming that I can't move, and she's there dancing. So you know, credibility is so important in these cases, and it comes into play in the mediation session.
Yeah.
You know, because all of us judge people, and you get initial thinking going, and you say, well, this person really doesn't have credibility.
I certainly feel that people have to realize they have to. They've got to be honest with themselves as well as their lawyer, if they have a lawyer, as well as certainly the system that they get involved with, whether it's mediation or whether it's a lawsuit that's filed and you're going to trial. If you are not honest, you're hurting yourself because they're going to find out.
Right.
I think it would be very unusual if the other side didn't find out about the real facts.
Right. And, you know, and that goes also for arbitrators especially, because you have to disclose any relationship you have other than a professional one. For example, if you've arbitrated 10 cases with company ABC, you've got to disclose that as part of a very lengthy disclosure that
you have
to submit to the other side.
I see.
And I, as a mediator, will say, you know, although I don't have a legal obligation to disclose, I may say that, well, I know the employee's attorney because we were on a panel together 3 years ago. Or I've mediated 3 or 4 cases with him or her. Or I've mediated cases with the employer. And I'll tell everybody, you know, at the beginning, it does not affect my judgment.
Yes.
And I'm going to, you know, this is a case that I'm going to work solely as a neutral with the goal of trying to get it settled.
Well, we have a few more minutes. If anyone out there has a question or a comment or would like to briefly speak to my guest, Mark Rudy, the number is 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. So if you would like to call in, please do it now because we have, I think, maybe 4 minutes maximum left in the program, and I'd like to give you a chance to do that if this is something that you feel you'd like to pose to Mark Rudy. Mark, I want to ask you, before we get another call, should we get another call, what about the area of minimum wage? I mean, there's a lot. The president wants to raise the minimum wage from whatever it is to $10.10 an hour. Do you get cases of minimum wage issues?
I do, and there's a whole body of law developing, Chuck, where especially people who are like automobile technicians, they work on the fixed rate.
Yes.
Or piece rate.
Yes.
Now the law is that if, you know, you're going to get paid for that work, but if you have work that's non-productive, non-productive time, you've got to pay the minimum wage for that.
You do.
You just can't tell people you're not, the next job is 2 hours away.
Yes.
Stick around.
I see.
You've got to pay the minimum wage.
And you've had cases like
many class action cases.
Really?
Yeah, especially in the fixed rate or piece rate, flat rate they call it, or piece rate cases.
Very interesting.
Right, and then, you know, if they're public construction or public works projects, you've got to pay prevailing wage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more than a minimum wage.
Oh, sure.
And then in various cities, of course, you have the living wage ordinances, where San Francisco, San Jose, where you have to pay more than a minimum wage to your employees. Not $8, but at some places it's $12, $11, whatever per hour. So there's just a lot of variables. But minimum wage litigation is really been very active lately.
What about misclassification of someone's job? Do you get cases like that? And if so, do you have an example you can give us in the next couple of minutes?
I do get cases. They're not as prevalent as before because the employers have gotten much better at making sure they properly classify.
Mm-hmm.
However, I've had situations, especially with regard to people who are involved in sales, where they're not paying sufficient, they're not earning enough commissions to meet the exemption, and so they're misclassified. A lot of salespeople work a lot of overtime hours and are not paid for it.
Really?
Right.
Wow. Well, I guess you're not going to have a dearth of cases for the future.
I think there's a lot of work out there, and well, I'm looking forward to.
Unfortunately, yes. There is. People have to be honest with themselves, I think. I mean, this is a matter of honesty in terms of how do you treat somebody else.
Absolutely.
Employer to employee and employee to employer. Thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you.
I think it's just great that you've come back. This is in 25 years. This is I forget how many times you've been on the program.
Well, I enjoy doing it. And congratulations on all the years and great years you've done this program. And looking forward to many more.
Thank you very much. Mark Rudy is an employment law attorney. He's a mediator partner in the San Francisco law firm of Rudy, Axelrod, Zeef, and Lowe. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar. Additional funding has been provided by the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. If you have questions about changes to Medi-Cal or have questions about Covered California, join us next week. My guest will be Peter Stern, certified specialist in estate planning, Elizabeth Landsberg, director of legislative advocacy, the Western Center on Law and Poverty, and Amber Cutler, staff attorney, the National Senior Center's Citizens Law Center. Thank you very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney.